It also reminds me for some reason with like a philosophical question, you know, the ship that every day we replace like a tile. When is the ship is the original? If the ship is the original, is it not? I love this. Love this so much.
No, it's a great metaphor, I think. It's a great it's a that's a great image for the idea. I think there are plenty of technology solutions that are completely unaligned to that image, but the idea around composable and composability is squarely aligned to that idea. Get ready to deep dive into the world of digital transformation, where we explore the latest trends, innovations, and challenges shaking up industries. Join us as we decode the secrets behind successful digital strategies and hear from experts who are at the forefront of disrupting the status quo. In each episode, we'll unravel the mysteries of the digital realm and uncover the hidden opportunities that lie within. From artificial intelligence to blockchain, from automation to cybersecurity, we'll leave no digital stone unturned. But hold on tight, because this podcast isn't your average tech talk. We're injecting a hefty dose of wit and humor into every episode, making learning about digital transformation an absolute blast. So if you're ready to embrace the digital revolution with a smile on your face, tune in to the Digital Disruption Podcast and get ready to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Don't miss out on the fun. Subscribe now and join us on this wild digital journey. All right.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Hello, Patrick. How are you doing
Hey,
today?
doing well, dude. How are you doing? Good evening.
Good evening. Good morning to you. Oof. How's
What's new
everything?
and what?
Did you have breakfast?
I did finally have breakfast. I ate a little late this morning.
What did you have for breakfast?
I had some Greek yogurt with honey, local wildflower honey, and a cheese sandwich.
Oh, how was the bread?
It was good. It was sourdough, so it was good.
Sourdough's tend to not get stale fast, to be honest. That's what I like about. I don't eat them that much, but I do like that they don't get they don't get stale that fast. Can't say the same thing about digital strategies today, can I?
That's true. You can't. And by the way, bravo for that intro. I didn't see that. I didn't see that coming, but I appreciate it. No, definitely sourdough bread has more longevity than some digital strategy. So that's a great
Yeah,
segue
definitely.
for sure. Yeah.
Everyone's
No.
like everyone wants to go for it, like the McDonald's, where nothing goes stale. It's like it's a chemical warfare, these sandwiches, but no one gets it right. Like no one.
Yeah.
So wanna lead with the sourdough?
Nice. Well, on the side of digital, staleness is a real problem. Things going out of date is it really is a big problem. It's funny to laugh about, but and if you think about what we've talked about in some previous episodes, how long it takes some of these digital transformation initiatives, 6 months, kind of minimum, up to 18 months, 24 months in some cases, if we're talking about really big wholesale change, it's very easy to start a project with a very cutting edge and timely solution, and then to get to the end of your project and some key areas of what you've just invested in are already out of date or soon to be out of date, which is never a good position to be in. So, with that in mind, having future facing, I really dislike that term, future proof. I know I use it sometimes, but let's say more durable, robust, and future facing investments that, that's usually a better bet, right? Trying to plan for the fact that things change. And honestly, having been in this industry for quite some time now, the pace of change has just accelerated compared to when I first started. So things have always been changing quickly, and now they change exponentially more quickly. So it's and that's why we're you've seen in the last few years the rise of not just as a buzzword, but actually as a set of emerging set of standards and practices, this idea of composable applied to things like your technology architecture, composable applied to certain kinds of functionality like customer data platforms or CDPs, right? People are looking for ways to, I guess, streamline the integration of different components of architecture of your technology stacks, finding ways to align around a shared set of sort of open standards. So kind of like the whole Mach Alliance would be one example of that. And then, in the kind of composable customer data platform realm, kind of looking at ways to, utilize these data warehouses and data lakes that people have already invested time in to get all, their data sourced into a repository. And then, rather than now creating a sort of a copy of your customer data, right, up in the customer data platform, why not layer those CDP functionalities, the segmentation, the audience activation, right? Layer that technology on top of the data warehouse without actually having to replicate the data some yet one other place, right? So, so kind of finding these ways of making technology integration, I guess, more in some ways the whole composable shift is also a bit more of efficient from both a cost and just sort of storage burden standpoint. But then also if you think of it from the entire architecture side, it means because it's based on the whole idea of using microservices, APIs, cloud native and headless solutions, right? That's the whole, at least from the Mach Alliance, that's kind of their mantra, right? What that means is that components that are compatible with that kind of architecture can be swapped in and out as needed. So that means if a digital asset management tool or a CDN or your e-commerce engine, if any of those things one need to be like upgraded to a new generation of engine, like from a legacy e-commerce engine to like let's see the latest and greatest engine, right? Like you can just swap that out as long as it follows the right standards, and you have, as long as you have developers that can help support the front end UI components of it, right? So you can swap out a digital asset management tool, you can swap out a CDN, right? You can that's the beauty of it. So things tend to have a little bit more lifespan versus developing this big monolithic infrastructure or using a a cloud, a suite, right? That all the features are baked in. So you either love it or you hate it, or you're sort of complacent because you just spent
You're stuck.
$500,000 implementing it, and then you're going to be on the hook for several hundred thousand more a year, and you're going to keep using this for the rest of your life. And then if it serves your needs, God bless and do it. I'm not here to say what solutions everybody should use. We're trying to highlight why things like composable standards are gaining traction, why composable CDPs are gaining traction. And I think when you sort of layer that together with the pace of change and the increasing pace of change, it becomes, even much easier to see. It's also why you see things, GA4, My brain's turned off here for a second. Diode, give me a second here. So, but you know, so let's well, let's start with J4 while I collect my thoughts on other examples. But the big shift from in GA4 over Universal Analytics is this kind of platform agnostic data model, right? It's built on events plus event parameters, right? It's very good at collecting data from, you know, both websites and apps, right? And putting it in this kind of agnostic data model. Other analytics tools do this as well, right? Like Heap and Amplitude, right? So we're moving into a world where the data used for analysis is also kind of increasingly kind of in these event stream type formats, right? So like now streaming data directly into your data warehouse, right? Following a specific schema, right? Supporting real-time insights, real-time personalization, all these things, right? Everything's kind of moving in that direction, where like at the foundations, it's all about, you know, kind of having a standard, having a schema, a data contract, right? Like you agree to publish data in this format, right? According, you know, and then people can, with the right credentials, can sort of, you know, subscribe to that data, right? And so the different applications, different vendors can all utilize these kind of data streams that are at their foundation, somewhat simple, but powerful, right? And it relies on like computational power on steroids, which the cloud kind of facilitates.
It does remind me of Legos, like how you can start with a base, satisfy your needs, and then continue improving, continue on building. It also reminds me for some reason with like a philosophical question, you know, the ship that every day we replace like a tile. When is the ship is the original? If the ship is the original, is it not? I love this. I love this so much.
No, it's a great metaphor. I think it's a great it's a that's a great image for the idea. I think there are plenty of technology solutions that are completely unaligned to that image, but the idea around composable and composability is squarely aligned to that idea. You can sort of replace and upgrade things as long as you have the right connectors and the right front end and the right integration structure, right? Like that is the beauty of it. And again, because of the pace of change, because tools, and all of these things, so there's the technology piece. So like technology can just become outdated, right? Like Google decided we're moving to GA4 and Universal Analytics is going to be completely deprecated. This was a change unlike other shifts. I mean, for a long time there were analytics properties, you know, using like Urchin code and you know, classic analytics. You know, they weren't obviously those code bases weren't supported by Google any longer, but they were still collecting data for a very long time. We're in a different world now where when like so if you had a standard Universal Analytics account, right, it's no longer collecting data. So if you either shifted to GA4 and are now using GA4, or you're using a different analytics tool, or you don't have analytics. And that's soon to be the case for GA360 license holders. So technology can just kind of go away or become outdated, et cetera, right? You may need to upgrade from a legacy Shopify or Magento e-commerce engine to the next generation, right? And there may be a cutoff date where you must do this, right, in order to have full functionality, in order to remain compliant with privacy and consent standards. You can't be doing things today the way you were doing things 5 or 6 years ago, right? So that stuff becomes stale. But you know, even like your customer data strategies become stale, right? If your data strategy is more than a few years old, it's stale, it's out of date. We've talked about skills before. If you don't utilize the things you learned about Google Ads, about Microsoft advertising, about Facebook paid social advertising options, right? If you don't use those for a couple years, or let's say 6 months, your skills are stale. If you did it at one time and you haven't done it for a while, your skills are probably out of date, right? The pace of change is that fast.
The tool is also out of
So
date.
the what, the
Like,
what?
the tools also are out of date. Like, what tools do we use that? I mean, I don't have any tools on mind now that is out of date, but with the regulations coming and like with the, we talked about the was it the DMA?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the DMA that the EU just like announced and Holger talked about. We talked about, I'll link this to one of our previous conversations about consent. Once you set up consent, it's really just up and running until a new change happens, and these platforms keep up with the changes because that's their whole jam. Like, this is what they do. They need to be up with regulations. Once something happens, they'll update you, say, hey, you need to update maybe your implementation and stuff like that. I think the same thing goes for composable technology. And like, if something goes out of date, you'll have something else that pops up and just says, hey, so this is the new big thing. And then you swap in, swap out, depending how deep is the technology, how deep are you in, how invested are you in. Are you
Yeah,
keeping up with
no,
the updates or not?
it's a good point. I mean, that is one, when you kind of take that approach of integrating kind of best in breed, right? Leading solutions. Like, so, I mean, I think on the privacy and consent front, I mean, there are some good solutions in the marketplace, in addition to OneTrust, but I think OneTrust is definitely the leader in that regard, and rightly so. Yeah, I mean, when new regulations come on board, it's very easy to integrate new consent experiences tailored to different geographies, setting up the different kind of consent. I guess there are two aspects of it, right? Fulfilling the actual consent requirements. So they do a very good job of keeping up to date with the consent requirements of the different frameworks, GDPR, CCPA, CPRA, right? And all of the other emerging standards. You mentioned the DMA. I'm sure, we're talking about, frameworks as for that as well. In many cases, you don't even have to like republic. So if you have the API, right, the scripts that initiate the OneTrust banner on your website and the consent behavior, right? Once you have that core script on there, oftentimes all you need to do is republish that script within the user interface. You don't even have to actually republish the script on your website at all. And you can totally change the privacy and consent experience that the user has based on their geography and whatever framework they fall under. So it's really handy, right? Like, that's one of the reasons why being able to choose which vendors you utilize for different purposes can be so useful. And that's not to say, if you're using a platform like Shopify for your e-commerce website, that's not to say you couldn't get full utility out of using Shopify's built-in privacy and consent tools as well. But it may not be as so. In that particular case, you might be locked into something in Shopify versus what you want to accomplish, say, with in the OneTrust world, right? Which is going to give you universal, like you can layer in a bunch of different privacy and consent and preference experience along with just managing privacy and consent, right? Like universal marketing preference center, right? Where you can not only manage your sort of what cookies you allow, but also like, do you want to hear from me via SMS and email and what frequency, right? So you can kind of cobble together a much more seamless kind of privacy and consent experience for your users. Again, I'm not singling out OneTrust as the only option here, but they are a very good option for a reason, right? And one of those reasons is the topic of this episode, which is staleness and how quickly things become out of date. And if that ability to integrate solutions with your website in ways that are seamlessly updatable is a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I also like because we praise composability as being, the not the best in breed, but kind of the next thing that is coming. We're also not saying that it doesn't go stale, even if you can swap in, swap out, platforms, tools, technologies, whatever. Anything can go stale. If
Yes.
you expose it to the right bad element, anything can go stale, and you cannot count on composability as being the one all done solution that you can set up and forget for 25 to 20, 50 years. It doesn't work like that. I mean, even composability with all of its benefits and all of it, the good things that it offers, you'll also need to stay up. Right on top on the digital strategy and just like the whole kind of shenanigans that is going on like right now. Because as I said, like you can swap in and swap out tools, but some tools will go out of date, some tools will maybe fall out of favor for other better tools. The composability offers decentralization, which what I believe people will be kind of looking for, because people are not looking for big enterprises that has everything baked in, but also extremely expensive, time consuming to learn and just lock the people in. I feel like with composability, where it offers the ease of use that a lot of enterprises are not really offering because they want to lock people in.
Let me push back on that one just a little to say, the marketer will probably, as a marketer, I think you're right in the sense of we perceive the ease of use of having the choice of all the tools, I think, but I will say your infrastructure is so critical to support composability, and then also you're kind of shifting the burden a bit to your front-end developers and integrators. So you have to have a team of really competent people, because most truly composable solutions, right? The components themselves, they lack, by design, they lack the kind of, that whole idea of headless, right? They don't have a front-end UI, because if they did, then they would be much more of a monolith, right? So you do become reliant on having really, really good solution architects and developers to sort of cobble all of these best in breed solutions together, right? So that's the only thing I will caution is, but I your original point, like that a composable solutions can go out of date. In fact, every component in your stack could go out of date if you just sort of took a set it and forget it type of mentality, right? So it's absolutely crucial to still be actively maintaining and enhancing and upgrading your systems, right? Like, but yeah, and you're also kind of now, sh and then you're kind of shifting that burden to the developers and the integrators versus like having those experts in Salesforce, right? Or having this expert in Adobe Cloud, right? Or having an expert in Google Marketing Platform. Instead, you're relying on the expertise of your really like really technical folks. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
But yeah, all those individual components absolutely can go stay. And they do. I mean, any of the major components of your web and app just stack. Like you do have generations of products, right? Like, I mean, things like your e-commerce engine is you're going to need to stay like on their code base cycle, right? Like if you just decide to stay on really old, a really old engine version, it's after a while, it's not going to be very compatible anymore. And at a certain point, they'll probably force you to upgrade, right? And then if you're not prepared to support that, it's going to cause issues.
Yeah, probably because security issues and stuff like that. That's one
Yeah,
of the
and
biggest
just
concerns.
functionality, right? Like checkout, cart checkout is going to start working differently, and payment portal integration, or every kind of major area that your commerce engine supports, and both from a back-end standpoint, but also from what the user experiences, that all those things need to be taken into consideration, right? Like, and just kind of down the line, that's just one example.
I want to ask about composable infrastructure. What does it consist of? Like, is it just the same infrastructure that we use, or is it, and then you pile composability above it, like layer it, or is it different?
I mean, it's not the infrastructure itself. I mean, you still need to have s server capacity, right? I would say very. I mean, there's a few industries where people are still maintaining on-prem, server infrastructure, but there's a huge been a huge shift for major components of people's server infrastructure to be in the cloud, right? Especially if you're in a non-sensitive, kind of an industry where you're not dealing with health information or highly, sensitive financial information. And even in some of those scenarios, you would have what we would call more of like a hybrid cloud situation, right? Where you, for non-sensitive data, you may have like significant investments in Google Cloud or AWS or whatever. So you need to have computation power. The beauty of having cloud infrastructure is it's inherently scalable, right? Based on like utilization, there's financial implications. So there's a big shift. Say if you're not investing in the hardware, there's a huge, big shift budgeting wise, but from CapEx expenditures to OpEx expenditures, from capital expenditures to operating expenditures, right? So if you're not investing in like server hardware and a data center on premises, right? Kind of for many companies that would seem like very old school approach, right? So you're not investing in those upfront costs very much, but there's a much bigger ongoing cost associated, that's based purely on your utilization, right? So from your like seasonal lulls, maybe server capacity needs are much lower and you can automatically scale down, right? Utilization of resources, and then holiday peak, right? Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and then on through the holiday shipping deadlines, you need to make sure you have as much power available as possible, right? So from that, I think composably more is more reliant not so much on the infrastructure but as on the architecture. So how do you design your data systems? How do you design the integration points, right? Like essentially what you don't want to do is have your solution architect or architects design a system where you have co individual components, but you've designed the integration in such a way that it just becomes a monolithic architecture and you're locked into everything that you've decided, right? So you are trying to create all of the integration pipelines between your data and the different core components of your business, that are digital, right? In a way, and then the front end component of it, the actual kind of UI and interaction points, you're reliant on those architects to design it in such a way that it continues to facilitate, right? Like the APIs are such, the integration points are such that you really can swap out a component without breaking the entire system, right? So I think it has more to do with the architecture than it does the infrastructure. But I guess in my educated opinion, but an opinion, I think the move to more cloud infrastructure facilitates it better because of the kind of inherent scalability without having to invest all kinds of time, money, and resources into standing up new physical assets in order to, right? Like, if I want to deploy a new an app, via the cloud, using like Kubernetes or other like this kind of containerized mentality, right? It's like very easy to utilize cloud infrastructure to do stuff like that. But I think the focus needs to be more on the architecture. And I think that's why you see, like, say, Mach Alliance, the focus is on, right? Like, how do you design solutions and have enterprise worthy components that are compatible with a set of emerging open standards, right? So do we all understand, like, how microservices work, how APIs work, cloud native, headless, like what does headless mean in different contexts, right? And then what does it take from developer resources, solution architect resources, like to really do it right?
Which
Does that make sense?
I think, yeah, I would ha I was gonna say, I think the two blogs that you've published a while ago, like a couple of months ago, they also expand on some of the notes that might wanna send people into, a rabbit hole of searching and researching and finding what works for them.
No, I think, I mean, if you're already locked into a solution, you have vendor commitments, technology commitments, then this is maybe not, I mean, I still think this is relevant, and worth thinking about, because you can have kind of a hybrid, right? Like you could have composable data infrastructure, even though maybe your entire digital sort of infrastructure isn't composable. So you don't, it's not all or nothing. So I think, but if you're getting ready to do a major like relaunch or re-architecting, upgrading your systems, getting ready, thinking about going along some digital transformation journey, seriously thinking through what kind of architecture you want to build, I think that is should be a really dedicated and robust part of your planning process for sure, your strategy, your kind of overall strategy. I'm no doubt about it.
All right. I don't have any other questions. I think we've covered it all. Any closing notes?
No, just don't be more like sourdough bread than sprouted grain bread, because that goes as soon as you open the package. I mean, before you even open the package, it's already stale. So, but as you said, though, sourdough bread seems to have a longer shelf life for whatever reason, and we want your technology solutions to be the same.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Patrick. This has been a super fun session. Hopefully, people have a lot to think about now and a lot of good decisions to make. But we will be catching you in the next episode. We'll see you.
Sounds good, my friend.
Bye-bye.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Digital Disruption Podcast. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into the world of digital transformation and gained valuable insights to help navigate the ever-changing landscape. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us on our website, esens.com, or connect with us on social media. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting discussions on the forefront of digital innovation. Remember, the future is now, and it's time to embrace the power of transformation. Thanks for listening, and until next time.